Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire for the Detroit Lions, of course. Eric, did you know we did a podcast? It's been a few weeks. I don't remember how all the other ones went, but you know we have a new one today.
110. Episode 110,
I believe. Yeah, no, we're cracking the century plus a decade mark.
Yeah. Yeah, we needed to take a week off. This time of the year gets really busy. So, unfortunately, 1 week off and back at it now.
All right, so let's dive right in. Most importantly, there's been a ton of transactions. First of all, yeah. Eric, I have to congratulate you because you were right all along. Lions trade tight end Michael Roberts to the New England Patriots for conditional 7th-round pick in 22. I thought it was unconditional. There's rules attached to the 7th-round pick?
Yeah, it's like playing time or something like that. Like, he's probably got to make the roster or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
They can't just give him a draft pick?
You would think, right? But that's...
It's going to be at the end of the 7th round.
It's actually Atlanta's, which would be earlier. But yeah.
No.
If it makes it any better.
Well, that's... No, it's disappointing.
You know, I don't know what the conditions are. It could be playing time. It could be 53.
Well, the simple fact that it's a conditional pick. Yeah. You know, yeah. They should have just gave him a 7th-round pick. And that's terrible.
That's what they got
for him.
Yeah, I agree. I thought they could have got a 6th. Before it was announced, I actually thought it would be a 6th.
No, to the listeners who may not remember, he was a 4th-round draft pick.
Yeah.
You're a big fan of his out of the University of Toledo. A lot of touchdown receptions his senior year.
25 or something.
Senior year?
Oh, total. Yeah. 16 is senior year.
Yeah. Oh, sounds like Ebron. Not that I'm saying he's going to end up like Ebron out in New England. Of course, there's the Kyle Van Noy fears. I know Bademosi didn't go ahead and do that when he was traded to New England.
Sure.
But, you know, it's always going to be looming. You know, that whole, now that Ebron's broke out, anybody else who leaves, it's going to be, always going to be great. Well, and then compounded by the Van Noy thing, going to New England and becoming a much more useful player.
Well, you know what it does is it really speaks to where his position was on this roster, if they're willing to give up so little for him. And I think there is something to be said for the timing of it as well. If they held on to him into training camp and they let him try and win a spot, and, you know, a couple weeks into training camp, then dealt him, you're not doing him any favors. By dealing him now, he's now got 6 weeks to focus on the playbook in New England. He'll have a chance to come into New England with a little bit of knowledge, and that increases his chance of being able to be successful down the road rather than if they would have done this 8 weeks from now. So help him out a little bit. And honestly, doing it now and it being conditional, you're actually helping him make it. So you're actually helping your own conditions or helping him meet the conditions, I guess. So there's advantages to doing this now, but it obviously, you know, he had fallen down the depth chart, and there were at least three tight ends clearly ahead of him.
One's Logan Thomas.
Correct. Right. And the fourth one was Nauta, who they are really think is a phenomenal guy.
They thought Michael Roberts was a phenomenal guy.
And, yeah, they did. And so the fact that they're willing to part with him, I mean, I think they think he was probably tapped out. And they at the press conference today, Patricia talked about the fact that starting a new system, some guys just fit into the system and some guys don't. And that this could be one of a couple moves that we might see over the next however many weeks.
What are your feelings on what Michael Roberts' role will be in New England? I know this is the Lions podcast.
A third tight end, you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to come in and be one of the top two guys in my mind, but you never know. You never really thought Van Noy would develop into the starter that he is. New England has a really unique way of taking cast-offs and turning them into two really legitimate contributors.
To say the least.
Yeah, I mean, that is why they are perennial contenders.
All right. Let's move away from the Michael Roberts news. We chewed up a couple minutes there.
Sure.
So, the next biggest move is the addition of Jermaine Kearse, former wide receiver for Daryl Bevell up in Seattle.
Yeah, he played 5 years in Seattle under Darrell Bevell. He was an undrafted free agent, worked his way onto the roster, then worked his way up to a starter role, and he was a pretty significant contributor in the Super Bowl. He was one of the top three wide receivers on the Super Bowl team. If you remember, he made that ridiculously crazy catch against the Patriots, the catch that set up the Marshawn Lynch no run, or Malcolm Butler interception, however you want to look at that play. So Kearse, there's a lot of familiarity with him from all points of the coaching staff. He goes to the Jets after Seattle and has a good 2017. 2018, he gets a couple injuries. He has a rookie quarterback. He struggles. His receptions and targets both get cut in half, so his production's way down, and he's not fitting in with what they want. So he leaves in free agency. A lot of people thought he would get a contract bigger than he did. Ends up in Detroit for just a little bit over $1.3 million with only that $0.3 guaranteed. So it's a real low-risk investment for the Lions for a guy who is comfortable playing all three wide receiver positions in this offense. He's one at the X, the Y, and in the slot. So he can do a lot of things, and he could be a nice wide receiver four. When you look back at the fact that Amendola has a bit of a history, injury history, there's nice insurance for that. He fits in with Travis Fulgham and stylistically, and so there's advantages to him helping Travis Fulgham's progression, and even young guys like Andy Jones and Chris Lacy. And so there's a lot of benefits of bringing a guy like him in, and there's still going to be an acclimation process, but a real low-risk, high-upside move, in my opinion.
All right. Does he make the 53-man roster?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. High watermark in 2017 with the New York Jets. 102 targets, 65 receptions, 810 yards, 5 TDs.
Yeah. That was a good year. I mean,
down since then, and I wouldn't expect that out of him this season, unless we got a ton of injuries, and we'll see him a lot. His playoff game logs, his best game was against the Carolina Panthers in their, what would that be, the divisional round playoffs. He had 3 receptions, 129 yards, and a TD.
Yep. I think that
played very well against the Panthers in the playoffs in his career. 200-yard receiving games.
And this, and I'm going to sidebar here to Darrell Bevell and talk about that playoff run. So Kearse had a 100-yard game. And so did each of the other two wide receivers on that roster. In that playoff run up to the Super Bowl, 3 different receivers had 100-yard games. And that speaks to the fact that Bevell has that flexibility and he's willing to target different guys. And so another thing, if you're looking for, hey, why should I like Darrell Bevell? That makes a lot. You can look back at that season and see some good things that he did.
All right, the next piece of big news, which to me might be the biggest, is the addition of quarterback David Fales, which means I have to come to terms with the fact that Connor Cook's NFL career is likely over.
Yeah, I mean,
4 teams this offseason.
He could maybe get a shot if someone gets injured in training camp, but yeah, it's a tough road. It's going to be a tough road. If you can't make quarterback 3 on this roster, that's not great. Now, he had a good start to OTAs. In my opinion, he was clearly behind Tom Savage. That's not the opinion of everyone. So other people thought that he played well enough to maybe be in the mix for quarterback 2. In my opinion, I thought he would have made it to training camp. I didn't see enough out of David Fales today to know if he's going to be an upgrade to Connor Cook or not. Just based on how they ran OTAs today, it was mostly first and second team, so you only saw Fales a handful of times, and so it's too early to really, you know, figure this out, but it was a bit of a surprise move, and again, if they're making this move now, doesn't speak well for Cook's long-term projection.
All right, next up, the Lions sign an interior offensive lineman, Luke Bowanko.
Yeah, so he was a starter for the Ravens a few years back. He has some pretty serious potential you know, he's just, but he's a
transition. He's not making guy. The team.
It would be difficult, I would think. Yes, based on how the roster is aligned. Now, I can tell you that today he was splitting second team reps with Leo Colomatangi. So that was Leo's spot. Now he's having to share it. And so
they're doing whatever it's going to take to get rid of Colomatangi.
Well, you know, Colomatangi, they were repping out at guard as well as center, so they're trying to give him a little bit more range. But Boenko has, like I said, that NFL experience. So, you know, if they're going to keep 10 offensive linemen, maybe he sneaks in. If they keep 9, I would say he's probably on the outs, though.
All right, the last addition is wide receiver Brandon Riley.
You know, they had him in camp before. They cut him and brought him back. He's a big slot. Chances of him hanging on through the first week of training camp will be challenging, I will say.
All right, and then 4 players released, including Cook, wide receiver Jordan Smallwood. They come and they go. He's a recent addition.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big guy, but he doesn't really have NFL upside.
Defensive end, an edge player, Juwan Young.
Liked him because he was an edge and also able to stand up, but they got a lot of those guys on this roster. He just couldn't cut it.
Finally, safety David Jones.
Jones was hurt, and he got cut with an injury settlement. So it's possible. I had to check the transaction wire to see if he reverted back to the Lions, and then maybe they have to put him on IR, or if they just gave him an injury settlement outright to make him a free agent. I have to look up the details on that. But he was injured pretty much all of OTAs and minicamp.
All right, so that's that for the transactions. So we're gonna segue calmly into the Rod Woodshed. We finally, you know, the weather's a little nicer, although we're getting quite a bit of rain today.
Yeah.
But we were able to use the weed whacker and trim around the shed. It's easier to get into now. All right, so our first discussion pointer is going to be about how the Lions can repair the relationship with Calvin Johnson. Sadly, we all know about this. This shouldn't even be something we talk about. We shouldn't even know.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, he shows up at Atlanta's OTAs today. And so that's going to keep the story alive. But, you know, he lives in Georgia, right? So it's not uncommon for him to make a move.
He's also visited Oakland.
Yep. And he just ran a camp out here in Michigan last week, too. So, you know, he said last week that it's all about the money to him.
Sure.
And he said, if you want to have a conversation, it starts with putting the money back in the pot in his bank account. And if he can do that, if the Lions want to do that, then they can start talking about bigger things. I still think that there's a path. When we've talked about this before.
It's paved with money.
Yeah, exactly. And the Lions can afford to pay him. Sure. They really can.
They did it with Barry Sanders.
Yep. And they can, you know, we talked about this on the podcast, and then I wrote an article based on what we talked about on the podcast. So I don't want to spend too much time rehashing the exact same topic. But you can pay him. And then, you know, an X number of dollars, and you don't have to disclose how much it was, but everyone will know if you pay him and he's all of a sudden an ambassador for the Lions, everyone will know how much you paid him. You know what I mean? So
yeah, but who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? I'm
still firmly in they're both wrong camp.
Yep, and I think they both can eat a little crow and they can both step up, you know. Like, a lot of people want to blame the team, and a lot of people want to blame him. And I think there's blame to be put on both parts. But the one thing that I think is keeping this from happening, realistically, is I think the Lions would probably be willing to pay the money. That's my gut feeling.
We'll see.
They would be willing to. I don't know if Calvin would be willing to accept the money with the conditions that would go along with that. I don't know if he would say, okay, I'll take the money, but I don't want to be the ambassador. And the Lions are going to say, well, why would we give you the money unless you're going to be our ambassador or something? You know what I mean? I don't know if he's willing to take the money and the strings. And the Lions are for sure going to want strings attached to it. Like Barry said, it took Barry maturing and seeing the bigger picture and realizing this is where I spent my whole career and I don't want to burn all the bridges back to this place, and I should be proud of my career. And he said, with Calvin, it's just time has to pass, and we just have to see how much time passes with that. So I don't want to spend too much longer on this, but that's you know, I think this is pretty much where nothing's changed from our discussion last time.
All right, next piece of news, the Lions add Fred McLeod to the preseason broadcast team.
Right, so that was Shepard for the last several years, right?
Yeah, well, it was...
But he's in baseball.
Gus Johnson did it before that. He's been in the mix for a couple of seasons.
So Shepard's doing the Tigers, so they needed somebody else. And immediately, the first thing that came to my mind was, why are they not using Dan Miller? And then I realized that Dan Miller's doing the radio at the same time, so that's why they're not using Dan Miller.
You'd also think Mike Tirico, but he's busy with his NBC schedule. But, you know, he does live locally, and
Ann Arbor.
It makes some sense.
So Fred McLeod, for those of you who are not old like us.
The voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And previously of the Detroit Pistons
yep.
For like 20 years, right? Something like that. So he's familiar with Detroit. He's done stuff here in the past.
I think he still lives here.
And I think he's done stuff for the Lions in the past, too, if I'm not mistaken. So it's not unfamiliar territory, but my goodness, this is a way callback. We'll see how he does with it.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be fine. And it really doesn't matter if he's not, because it's the preseason for everybody. Gus was warming up. Nat Shepard was warming up. Well, he wasn't, because he wasn't doing a lot of football. Mm-hmm. Unless, did he do Eastern games or something on the radio?
Maybe.
He would do the college, not the college, the high school championship games. I remember that.
With, he's come a long Ron way, Rubik. Hasn't he?
Yeah, well, who's going to be in the booth with him? Is it going to be Spielman?
Yeah,
okay,
Spielman.
So they're bringing Spielman back. No more Rob Rubik.
And Torrey will be on the sidelines again. So it's the same crew, just replacing Shepard with McLeod.
Yeah, I always find it interesting because that you can get a big name mm-hmm. for the preseason because they need to get warmed up too.
Sure.
All right, Lions won't be on HBO's Hard Knocks. I think we discussed this a little bit before. The Raiders are kind of more of a perfect storm.
Yeah.
Except I will note that like the league and HBO probably would have preferred if they had also moved to Las Vegas.
Yes.
Like all the other things on top of Las Vegas.
But, oh, yeah.
This is probably the next best thing.
You know, I don't think there was a compelling enough storyline somewhere else, and there are a litany of storylines.
Well, sure. Well, just Gruden alone.
And Mayock,
Mike
right?
Mayock. Who...
And then Antonio Brown, and you've got, we talk about Richie Incognito. There's like three or four former Lions, Tahir Whitehead, Nevin Lawson, Luke Wilson, Alex Barrett. And then there's also a bunch of local guys like Maurice Hurst,
used to be Connor Cook. No.
who's the defensive tackle that played at Ohio State that everybody wanted signed here? I'm blanking on his name.
Hendricks H. Is the name?
No, I think it might be, but an H. But it's not. It's Hankins.
Oh, Jonathan Hankins. Jonathan Hankins.
Yeah. So he's there. He's from Detroit as well, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, Mount Clemens or Madison Heights or something like that.
Those two towns are really not next to each other.
Well, I knew it was an M.
Start with M.
I knew it was an M. And then I think that the kid from Eastern, Max Crosby from this last draft.
Okay.
He's also so there's local names. There's former Lions. There's also drama galore. So there's some storylines.
There's drama galore. I don't know, but at the same time, I often find the show boring. I don't know. we'll see. Maybe they'll keep it real interesting this year.
You know, they always like to latch on to a personality. And then find these like sub stories, right? And I'm sure they'll find one. And look, Antonio Brown's from Central, right? Mm-hmm. So there's another local tie. You know, I'm sure that he will be appealing. They have three. They had three first round draft picks. They can pick any one of those guys, right? Too. They'll find there's plenty of avenues in which they could pursue with this.
We'll find out how boring Derek Carr is. He seems like he'd be boring. You can prove me wrong.
Well, you've seen his brother on TV.
Sure. So. Oh, yeah. What a mess.
Yeah, right. It starts early August, right? Something like that. So
yeah.
August
well, it'll
6th.
Be... Yeah. It lags behind a week of training camp.
Like 3 days behind the game or what it's supposed to be. So I think it will still be somewhat entertaining. And I think that there's enough neat things that it'll keep my attention. But
we can finally evaluate John Gruden as a coach. by what's on his computer screens, what's on the walls of his office, if he's got big thick notebooks everywhere, or if he's just wearing sandals and the Windows logo's just bouncing around his computer screen. You know, he didn't even change the default setting on the screensaver. All right.
Do you think, okay, let's play, let's think out of the box here. If they would have picked the Lions, do you think that would have had positive outcomes, negative outcomes?
I don't know. Well, what team has ended up with positive outcomes?
I guess the Browns,
but yeah, they were still an under 500 team. Although, yes, they rallied and had seven more wins than the year before. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It could go with you.
They exposed some things about the Browns, too. Like, they exposed...
Oh, how bad the relationship was between the coaches.
And how good Baker Mayfield was. And, like, there were some very obvious things that we kind of all got clued in on that we could see coming that, you know, 10 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, down the road, we all knew it was coming if we watched Hard Knocks, right? I think it would be good, honestly, for the Lions. I think there's, you know, everyone, we want to point to the it'll be a distraction element. I honestly don't know if it'll be a distraction. And I think it might actually help, from a national perspective, people see some of the personalities that are in the locker room, like Darius Slay, and like Deshaun Hand. Like, I think some of these guys that have these really cool things. And like, if you look at like Devin Kennard's altruism and like, what he does in the community is just like amazing. Right. And so, I think that if we want to segue into our next topic,
The one more piece I wanted to add. To me, the most interesting, the most interesting thing is to watch how the front office operates and how they operate with each other, and that could be very negative and actually, you know, drag the fan base down even deeper. But what would be quietly the most interesting thing is how hard Matthew Stafford would work to seem boring, because we've seen old pictures of him partying. We've seen him suck down beers at bars.
Recently,
he's a very likely a very fun-loving guy.
Sure.
A guy who maybe screws around a lot, just goofing off and stuff like that.
Sure.
Maybe an interesting character. Mm-hmm. And he's done, over the last 10 years, whatever it takes to come off as boring and as deadpan as possible. And could he keep that up in front of HBO cameras?
I think he could. You know what the cameras would really gravitate to? Kelly. My goodness, would they gravitate towards his family? I think he could. They would sell him on the
dad angle.
But I think the dad angle would come out. You know,
that would probably be
more than the party angle.
Well, I didn't mean necessarily as the party animal. There's a more interesting character there.
I think people
than what we see in press conferences and interviews.
What I think, and this is again from me being kind of behind the scenes here on some things, is. When you see Stafford in press conferences,
I had to do it because people would say something.
If you see him in press conferences, he comes off as this like you said, very straight laced, emotionless type of person. But there is a true fire to him that you get to see when the camera is not on him. Like look at all those.
That's what I'm saying.
But look at all the NFL films, like the docs that they do.
Well, the
him,
Cleveland
right?
game they mic'd him up for, yeah. And that's years ago already. No, but that's already like 9 years.
But they've done this with like a handful. He's done like six of these.
Yeah,
right?
But that was probably the most interesting one when they had that rallying comeback.
Mm-hmm. But I'm saying it. What I think would happen is I think people would see more of the fire in him, and that's something that I think gets lost in his press conferences, and that a lot of fans think that he doesn't care. There is a fire in him that I think people have dismissed, that they've forgotten about. And I think that would come out, and I think people would see that aspect. They would see the dad, but then they would see this fiery leader, because that's really what he is. He's really a leader, and he really will get on people, and he'll get on himself. And I think they could really sell that aspect of it. I think Patricia would benefit too, personally. I think they would get to see... He's not just, again, what we see in these press conferences is different than what you see on the field. Like, he's a very passionate guy. I think he would end up shining in a very positively, both to the local community and on a national level. They would see he's very different than Belichick. and the way he runs his practices and et cetera. And then, like I said, personalities in the locker room would really, I think, shine, and there'd be some really... I mean, you don't think the camera would be locked on, like, Miles Killebrew and Danny Amendola all the time, like, just looking at those, like, you know, model bodies that these guys have, where they're, like, these, like... picture, like, you know, they look like always, like, their hair is perfect and they're just all ripped and stuff. And
it's taking an interesting turn.
But I'm saying there's a lot of cool things that I really think the Lions were probably in it, because there's a lot of things that a lot of angles they could have taken. I just don't think it was nearly
juicy enough
compared to the Raiders. Yeah, but. There's some neat stuff that I think Lions fans would have really liked. Even the ones who think it would have been a distraction, I think there would have been some things that they would have really liked about it.
All right, that's enough about that one. We better move on before we go any deeper.
That's all right.
All right, we had a couple of things in your recommended reading.
Oh yeah, and one of them was an article on MLive from Kyle Meinke, who wrote about the latest social justice initiative that the Lions did, where they went out into a Detroit community where they had some of the players speak to the youth and talk about, like, what it was like for them growing up, and then allow the youth to see comparisons to their lives. And Meinke did a fantastic job. Like, you know, as a writer, I look at, like, you get in these habits and you write things a certain way and you get better through repetition, and then you read a thing that, like, Kyle wrote, just the way he organized it and articulated it, it was like, man, he's really good. And it's a phenomenal piece, not just from what he exposes, but the way he wrote it, the way he presented it. It was terrific, and something that it definitely changed the way I look at how I write myself. So I think it was a phenomenal piece. But then, like, when you talk about the fact that it's speaking to this, you know, action that the Lions have towards the social justice things that all stem from the kneeling
Kaepernick, in the meeting, right? With Mrs. Ford.
Yep, and Mrs. Ford saying, if you stand, I'm willing to support you in your cause. And this year they raised $600,000, and they're giving it back to these communities, seven different community projects that they're working on. This is one of them. Devin Kennard, again, is at, like, the center of a lot of these things. And I can't speak how much and how important he is in the stuff that he does. It's really impressive. Such a high character person off the field. But the center of this story... it focused around Tease Tabor and how he talked about his upbringing and how it affected him, and how he was, you know, this close to not getting kicked out of Florida and his football career, you know, basically ending, and about making right decisions, and then about how he turned it around at Florida, and then he gets to the NFL and he's drafted and he thinks he's made it, and then he struggles, and then how he has to turn around again.
Still struggling.
Yeah, and now it's, okay, this is going to go away from me if I don't make changes, and how he's making changes, and it's the type, and it's a good story on its own, but then when you tie it to the fact that he's having success in OTAs, you can really kind of see a big picture of his life off the field, on the field. It's really neat to see the whole thing kind of developing in front of you. You really like seeing a young man grow up and have success, and that's really cool to see.
Yeah, I read it as well. It's a very good read. Everybody should take a look at it. And sometimes when you get malaised or cynical about how pro athletes are or whatever, like, mm-hmm. It's good to read a story like that.
The second story is more focused on the field, and it was from the Draft Network. And they wrote an article, Brad Kelly wrote it, about the advantages of using multiple tight end sets. And he used it specifically about the Lions, based off of a report that I wrote about after minicamp about the different tight end sets and the multiplicity that they were using in these tight end sets. And so he talked about the advantages of using them. He put video, he used examples, he cited how it's worked in other situations. It's another really good story from the Draft Network. Again, you can find that at LionsWire. You can find that at Draft Network. really neat look at the potential of what the offense could turn into this year.
All right. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about the mini camp and OTAs first. The big one. Oh, we should, well, let's throw it in reverse for a second.
Yeah.
We're going to make both of those articles available through the links.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when you look at the, if you're on the website or if you're looking at the podcast synopsis,
yep,
we'll link to both stories. All right, moving on to minicamp OTAs. Darius Slay, Damon Harrison, they're still both skipping workouts, and it's not a good sign, but we got to keep seeing what's going to happen.
So we find out later that Harrison also had twin sons over the weekend. And so
he's just trying to make himself not look so bad by not showing up.
Right. Okay. I'm not going to show up, but 9 months ago I planned this excuse.
Well, no. He didn't plan the excuse. No, don't think too conspiracy theory into this. Like, it's like, hey, this is a great idea. Like, well, I'm staying home with the missus and the twin sons, you know.
Well, you know, I think I think having a pregnant wife that's going to have twins probably made the decision a lot easier to stay home. Mm-hmm. Could it have been the catalyst? I still think there's the contract is probably the catalyst.
Oh yeah, with
in
both of them, it's all about the contract.
Both
it's a
of
business,
them,
Eric.
Both of them lose $250,000 for missing OTAs, and then they lose another like just $88,000 plus for minicamp. You know, they'll probably make that back up in their next contract. But it'll be interesting to see how it works out, because there's an argument to be made that, you know, you don't want to set a precedence, but I don't care about that argument. I think you can set a precedence with your star players that you can renegotiate a couple years out, and that it's okay. I'm not worried about the precedence. I do think if you guarantee more money than what is guaranteed on their current contracts, you could really make them happier long term, but
also sink your cap flexibility.
Yeah, but you know what? You've got the cap room this year to do stuff like this. Like, they could extend Glasgow, A'shaun Robinson, even Joe Dahl if they wanted to, make both these moves.
You need to extend your fullback.
And and I think they could, like, just... Look, Slay's got a big cap hit. If they negotiate him and add years, they could lower that cap hit and actually free up more money. You know what I mean? So,
but like you said, they don't necessarily need to free up more money.
Yeah, they don't need to. Like, I think you can shift money around. You can guarantee different money. You can probably add a year onto each of their contracts. I think there's again, not overly complicated ways to fix these problems. I think the big potential problem is the fact that Drew Rosenhaus represents both of them. And he can be a bit of a complicated person to negotiate with sometimes.
No, that's why he gets his players so much money. To the detriment to the team in a lot of ways, but yeah. This is the way it goes. All right, next up, Danny Amendola and Matthew Stafford building relationships in camp.
Yeah, you know, look, so you've been missing Marvin Jones, you've been missing Kenny Golladay, and so Amendola has really been the guy. We talked about adding Curse, helping to that, but their starters have been Amendola and Andy Jones and Chris Lacy, and then Chris Lacy got hurt, and they put Fulgham in there, and they put Curse in there, and so there's just, it looks a little bit rough right now without the starting two, so there's a lot of opportunity to add a nice set of relationships between Amendola and Stafford. Amendola is tough to cover, but you know, he's a very passionate guy. Today at camp, Stafford was targeting. He threw a ball, and it was from our angle. It was hard to tell if it was targeting Andy Jones or if he was targeting Amendola. Based on the pictures that the Lions put out, it kind of looked like it might have been Amendola. But then also Amendola's reaction after the play. He chucked his helmet about 25 yards. He was so mad after the play. So it, like, ended, like, the series. Like, they were doing this. You have four downs. You can drive the field. You get a first down. You get it resets. And you try and score. And they were right there, right on the doorstep. And then they threw a pick to tease Tabor, of course, who has five interceptions and, like, six games available to them. Or practices available.
You shouldn't let that information out, because if they cut him, the Packers or the Vikings or the Bears are going to sign him.
Well, I don't think that's happening anytime soon. That's for sure. But Amendola was very fired up about that play not working the way that it was supposed to. So it's neat to see the passion. I really think he's going to have a bigger role than we had originally anticipated. But I still think there's going to be a lot of heavy tight end use this year, which could limit how much he's actually on the field.
All right, Deshaun Hand's extra work mentality is catching on at OTAs and in minicamp.
So we've talked about this in the past too. Like last year, Ricky Jean-Francois was helping the other interior defensive linemen understand how to switch from a one-gapping scheme to a two-gapping scheme, and talked about positioning, arm placement, all kinds of fundamentals of the two-gapping system that Patricia runs. And so we have seen this carry over with no Ricky Jean-Francois and no Damon Harrison. We have seen Hand step up and start mentoring some of the younger players in order to get them further along in their developmental process. And so he's doing this after the practices are over. He's spending time with them. It's a really cool thing to see. And this kid is 22, 23 years old, and he's already stepping up and leading post-practice workouts and technique stuff. And I mean, it's an impressive thing to see someone that young take a leadership role, even if it's at his position group. He's taking that on. And you could see it a little bit last year. You could see his personality growing in the locker room and him becoming more of a vocal person in the locker room. And now we're starting to see it on the field and even after the practices as well. So it's a cool thing that it's nice to see. And when we saw it translate over into other groups, the linebackers had some extra work. Today, after practice, it was Travis Fulgham who was out there working with his assistant wide receiver coach. There's a nice mentality that this is establishing of putting in the work even when the last whistle has blown.
Well, that's really good news to hear, and let's hope they keep it up. More importantly, let's hope it pays off.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, right?
All right, we're 37 minutes in.
All right, well, let's talk more about whatever these OTAs and stuff. What do you want to do?
We have a very important question that's apparently waited 30 years.
Okay.
And then we made him wait another 37 minutes. So, Marty Hogan asks, something I've been wondering for 30 years, all right, spoiler alert, why are the halfbacks lined up all the way back while the fullbacks are lined up halfway back?
So, you want to take a stab at this? I looked it up, and I want to see what you're... I'm sure you...
I don't know the answer.
I'm sure you have a good idea, though.
There are two things that popped into my head. Mm-hmm. The first one was, we have a wishbone. If you run the wishbone, the fullback is directly behind the quarterback, and he's all alone. Mm-hmm. So he's a full back. He's the full back behind the quarterback. Now, then you have a left halfback and a right halfback, and they are behind the full back and the left and the right. Now, that's also true of the T formation.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's older than the wishbone.
Yes.
But could it also be derived from the single wing, which...
Now you have wing backs and stuff in that.
Well, you have a slot. Yeah, you have the slot back. You have a blocking back. Mm-hmm. I don't even think necessarily one's called the quarterback.
Let's not oversimplify. Okay. Let's not overcomplicate this. From my understanding is it goes back to the T formation, which then, like you said, varies out to the wing formation and stuff. And essentially, the fullback was in the old systems that were power runs, is that the fullback was behind the quarterback, and therefore he was fully back. The halfbacks, like you said, there was a left and a right. And so, but they were called halfbacks because they were taking halves of the field.
Yeah.
It wasn't their proximity to the line, it was their proximity to the sideline. So fullback was all the way, the one halfback covered one half of the field to the sideline, the other halfback covered it to the sideline. And the way they identified those was that the fullback was usually a bigger, more powerful runner, mm-hmm. and the halfbacks were usually your smaller, more fleet of foot runners. And so as these offenses
evolve
and develop, and then you end up having the wing backs, and then you have And then you start seeing different options come out of it. They kept these names where the bigger back was always, they just, it's been all, the bigger back has always been the fullback. So now we're still going to call that bigger back the fullback, even though we're moving him closer to the line. The halfback is always the smaller guy, so we're still going to call him a halfback, even though he's now in a fullback position.
The tailback.
Right? Exactly, which is why they tried the tailback, which is another acceptable term. But so, yeah, so the answer here basically stems from going back like to almost like, this is like even rugby days when they used to do this stuff, right? And so it all goes back to how they were originally lined up in this T formation, and then the names stuck with the body types, and even though those positions have moved, the names have stuck because this is the bigger guy, so he's the fullback. This is the smaller guy, he's your halfback, and it doesn't make sense anymore, but that's the way it's been, and you know, NFL loves their history, right? And so that's why they stick.
Yeah, it's very traditionalist based, although mm-hmm. they wear different helmets now.
Sure. But they try and keep as much of that in there as possible. So that's your answer. It goes back to proximity
to the field.
Exactly.
Now, extra credit points.
Sure.
And I hope I'm not putting out here. Why is it called the quarterback? Does he only have a quarter of the field? And back in the day, the quarterback did a lot of running, and a lot of it was end around running in the option. So he was running all over the field. So.
I don't recall. I know there's a story to it. I just don't recall what it is.
Well, of course there's a story to it. I mean, I remember. So maybe that's what we'll follow up with next
week. I remember the story, but I don't remember what the story was. So I don't want to speak out of turn and say I don't know.
Daniel Reese says, who do you expect to have a breakout year in Bevel's system? Who's the dark horse or could shine in the system?
Boy, I mean, the guy who you really think is going to shine in this system is going to be Kerryon Johnson, because this is going to be a run-first system. And Kerryon has really shown so many different aspects of what he can do. In OTAs and minicamp, he's caught the ball like a wide receiver. He's shown good wiggle. He's shown good routes. There's no tackling and there's no pads, so of course they're going to be limited in how impactful of like a runner he can actually be. But he looks quick, and when you look back at his history, there's so much there that speaks to his wiggle and his his vision. It really seems like this sets up for Kerryon to really be the guy who's going to be the difference maker. Now, the dark horse, that's going to be a little harder because
there are no dark horses. There's all these websites, there's all these podcasts. Right. Everybody's talking about everybody. Well, there's no dark
horse. Right. I mean, you're obvious. You have two very obvious starters in Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones. You have a very obvious third in Amendola. Jesse James and Hockenson are your very obvious tight ends. And so I don't think there's anybody that's going to come out of nowhere to surprise. It would take an injury, right? It would be like C.J. Anderson gets hurt, and now all of a sudden Zach Zenner is vaulted into running back two, and all of a sudden Zach Zenner is in a great spot, and he becomes a dark horse. You know what I mean?
Can he really be the dark horse? He started a game last year. You know, he started three games the year before that. He's always going to be looming.
But I think if you're talking about guys who you're not expecting to succeed or not expecting to play a significant role, he could happen. But I think you can make that argument with other people too. You could say, hey, if a receiver gets hurt, another guy is going to step up, or maybe Logan Thomas finds his way in the lineup more because they want to use more three tight end sets. So I don't know. The dark horse one is hard to put a peg in right now. But I'd say the one who's probably going to have the best year is probably Kerryon. I do think this system sets up really well for Golladay as well, but Kerryon he should be the guy.
You're not going to like this.
Uh-oh.
All right. Wikipedia, take it with a grain of salt. Let's get a little Walter Camp mixed in here. The quarterback in this context was often called the blocking back. All right, I skipped a bunch of stuff. Maybe I got to back it up a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Walter Camp, prominent athlete, rugby player at Yale University.
Correct.
Early powerhouse in college football. Same thing with Harvard and Princeton and all that.
Trophies named after Walter.
Yeah.
Yep.
pushed through a change in rules at a meeting in 1880 that established a line of scrimmage and allowed for the football to be snapped to a quarterback. Change was meant to allow for teams to strategize their play more thoroughly and retain possession more easily than was possible in the chaos of a scrummage, not a scrimmage, in rugby. In Camp's formulation, the quarterback was the person who received the ball snapped back with another player's foot. Originally, he was not allowed to run forward of the line of scrimmage. Nice and boring. Right. A scrimmage takes place when the holder of the ball puts it in the ground before him and puts it in play while onside, either by kicking the ball or by snapping it back with his foot. The man who first receives the ball from the snap back shall be called the quarterback and shall not rush forward with the ball under penalty of foul. The quarterback in this context was often called the blocking back, which I remember from the single wing world, as their duties usually involved blocking after the initial handoff. The fullback was the furthest back behind the line of scrimmage. The halfback was halfway between the fullback and the line of scrimmage. So that goes back to what I was saying.
Right.
And the quarterback was halfway between the halfback and the line of scrimmage. Hence, he was called a quarterback by Walter Camp. But this goes back to 1880s.
So. Right. And then it's merged a little. It merged. Like when you talked about the T, then it's
the T's
the
much
way,
later
right?
than 1880s.
Exactly. But so yes, I mean, Marty, there's a couple different interpretations, I guess, is what.
Well,
we're
now you know.
Here,
now
right?
you know a little out of the background,
right? And so
knowing is half the battle.
And these positions move around, and so that makes sense.
You were right, Eric. It's okay.
No, it's fine. I get it. I get both. Like I said, both ways. No, but that makes sense because he's a quarter of the way back.
It's the easiest to know why it's the nickel back because he's the fifth back.
Oh, right, right, and the dime, but then...
Well, then the dime gets confusing because you're not putting 10 out there, but there's no... You're not going to call it the sixpence back, you know, because we don't use that money system, so there's a whole lot in there.
Well, and like anything, you know, like, there's always going to be variances in terminology.
Oh, yeah, like, well, now everything, you know, we got edge rushers and you know...
And jacks and
the
Sams.
The jack linebacker and the viper
Sam,
and, you know...
Right, and a Sam in one system isn't a Sam
star.
In another. Yeah, well, that's like... Yeah, Ohio State's star is similar to Michigan's viper.
Then there's
which
the
is,
money backer.
Right, all right. So, there's always going to be variations that diverge into different things is basically where we're kind of going.
And it's
going
to get dumber and dumber. Like, because listen to that, you know, like, it was the fullback. And then it's the halfback. And then a quarter of the way is the quarterback. Now people are like, well, what's bigger, a quarter, a half? You know? So we're going in the wrong direction.
All right. So what are we on? How are we doing on time?
Well, we're 47 minutes in.
All right. So let me tell you, I'll tell you a story about camp from today.
Yeah, Eric happened to be at practice today, and they actually practiced, because I was wondering with all the skies supposed to open, things have been rather tame throughout the day, but I just jinxed it, so we're going to have a rough overnight here in the southeastern Metro Detroit area. Unless somebody's really getting pummeled out here, like 20 miles west of here. I don't know if that's true.
It could be. So I talked about like how there was, it was a weird practice today because there was a lot of like, it was almost like end of school year. Like I think Burkett even might have wrote that in his thing. I glanced at it. But there was a lot of, people were really kind of emotional and they were kind of like ready to be done. And they knew that when this was over, they're basically like walking out of the building. And so they were excited, but they were also like, there were frustrations, like I said, with Amendola. I didn't see it, but one of the other beat writers told me that Tom Savage banged his helmet at one point too. So it was a very interesting practice, a lot of emotion,
a lot of testiness.
But the funny thing was, right near the end,
sass back.
Right near the end, Tyrell Crosby threw a bit of humor, which caused us to crack up in the stands. I would think that it would have caused some of the other players to laugh as well. But so after the Tabor interception, the second team comes on and they're going down the field. And sure enough, they throw a ball that's tipped by the tight end and then picked off by the safety. This time it's C.J. Moore. And Moore catches the ball and they just say, hey, go down. And he just like kind of goes down in a big heap, like right out like at the 2-yard line or something like that, right? But the drill's over and that's basically it. And in a fetal position, cradling the ball, you know, holding the ball, you know, doing that protect the ball thing. And Tyrell Crosby has made his way over there because he's trying to tackle him, you know, well, without pads on, right? Without as much as you can do. And he stands over him, and C.J. Moore isn't moving. And he's standing over him, and C.J. Moore isn't moving. And so Crosby reaches for the ball. Moore, you can see Moore like kind of like turn with it. And Crosby just picks him up by one arm like a small child. And he picks him up, walks him back 2 yards into the end zone, and drops him in the end zone, and then turns to his offensive lineman and puts up the safety symbol. And he's like, and I laughed because I'm like, that's hilarious, because he just basically picked up this grown man like he was nothing and just chucked him back a couple feet. It was a somewhat lighthearted moment that Matt made me laugh.
And the players weren't chuckling about this?
You couldn't tell.
It's too far away.
We're too far. Yeah. The unfortunate part about OTAs and minicamp has been that there was a football...
The lack of access.
Well, they have two football fields that run left to right. Right in front of us, and
you got to say east to west or north to south.
And the it would have been north to south based on the proximity. So the one directly in front of us apparently has a drainage issue. So they almost always practiced on the field further away, and so that just made it a little bit. It just made it harder for us to see. So because you've got a whole, you know, like it's probably like 60-70 yards. That we're trying to like watch the stuff.
Yeah, sure.
So,
the width of a football
field. Yeah, right. And then additional like gaps.
Plus at least the hash mark.
And then we're back as well. So we were ways away
A nuclear bomb detonation. You're in the little pillbox and everybody's wearing glasses.
So it's hard to tell. You know, like you can put your binoculars on and you can see pretty close. But again, you're not like reading emotions and stuff like that with that. But you could definitely like, I mean, Crosby's a big enough guy. You can make out numbers, so you could see that it was Crosby that picked him up. And Crosby is a very fun person. The stuff he does in the off season is really cool. He's very lighthearted and jovial. And so another guy that I just really think is on the field and off the field, just a really cool guy.
All right. That's it. That's all the time we got. But we got a minute for shout-outs. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're up another 5 reviews. Or another 5 ratings and a few more reviews.
We love getting them. We really appreciate them.
Yeah, even when we're off, right, we still got them, which is really cool. Adam of Bend, Ed Coyle, who I know from Twitter, and G Lions fan. I think he might have written something from us last week. I couldn't tell if he was wrote. We credited him last week or not. But I know those were our latest 3 in there. But, you know, we've also seen a nice influx of people on Twitter asking us, you know, if we're going to do another, when our next podcast is coming, and saying nice things that other people should listen. Like Josh Brown was a guy who said some really nice things about us recently. I took note of that for sure. And then, you know, we appreciate all the efforts that people are making to let people know about
us. Yeah, no, that's great. Great response. And we thank everybody who doesn't review but still listens.
Or doesn't have the capability, right?
Yeah, or can't do it. Yeah. No, we appreciate you listening nonetheless. We love the reviews. Keep them coming. We should be back next week. That's the plan. Who knows what will end up happening. It is a quiet time of year, so if there's any time we're going to be delinquent on making a podcast, now's the time. So until next week, let's go Lions.